So see you next week on my birthday to play some more music and talk a little bit more to all of you. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great rest of the day.
Accessibility,
disability,
mental health,
ADHD and ADD,
and many, many more topics we explore and cover.
But where?
On CITR's All Access Pass.
A unique and collectively run show on equity, inclusion, and creating awareness for people of all abilities in BC and around the world.
Catch us every other Wednesday afternoon from 3 to 4.
If you want more info or want to get involved, please find us on Facebook or send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lakshmi, and you're listening to Season 6 All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm joined by my Accessibility Collective teammates, Deepi, Christy, Sarah, Katie, and a new member, Richard. Who are you?
Hello, everyone. My name is Richard, and this is my first time on the Accessibility Collective. I'm from Vancouver, and I'm currently in my second year, studying biology. I really enjoy photography, and if you live near Vancouver, you'll probably catch me photographing birds in a park. I actually found out about the Accessibility Collective through Reddit. And I thought it was a great opportunity to talk and learn more about the issues and difficulties surrounding various disabilities. I'm super excited to be a part of the collective, and I'm looking forward to an amazing season.
Thanks so much, Richard. Great to have you on the team. Today's show of All Access Pass is a really good one because we are looking at BC's and US elections. Why are we looking into this? Because it affects everyone, including people with disabilities. Whether it is housing, healthcare, benefits, supports, and education, it changes our lives in a big way and our voice. Rather, our votes really do matter on what we want our future to look like. But first, let's go to a song break. Katie, what song are we listening to?
Hi, everyone. Here's a song, Say What You Will, by Justin Hines, off the album of Chasing Silver.
Dream come true.
this was the last goodbye. No more tears to dry. I would say it one more time. It's been more than fine. But how could I know? So say what you will before it's too late. Say what you will. Say what you will before it's too late. Yeah, say what you will.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.5 FM. The song you just heard was Say What You Will by Justin Hines off the album of Chasing Silvers. Justin Hines is a singer-songwriter born in Newmarket, Ontario, and has been in the spotlight since he was 14. He was born with a rare genetic joint condition called Larson's syndrome, which confines him to a power wheelchair. Along with his musical work, he's also the founder of the Justin Hines Foundation, a charitable foundation for people with disabilities.
Thanks, Katie. Now to our show topic. How does the election affect us and everyone, including people with disabilities?
First off, we'll be talking about the U.S. elections. With the country in the midst of a recession and a global pandemic, and more divided than ever, the stakes are high when it comes to the 2020 election. Sarah, take it away.
Hi everyone, it's Sarah here. Well, as you might be aware, the U.S. election just had its second presidential debate, with President Donald Trump and Vice President Joe Biden duking it out on stage. This year's election has high stakes, including changing the borders of the Electoral College districts and changing the opportunity for some states to sway the vote, as well as impacts on healthcare and international relations, including with us up here in the North, Canada. Not to mention, the U.S. is a powerful nation, so their choices impact funding towards aspects such as climate change, supporting the World Health Organization, and aiding low-income or war-torn countries. As well, the U.S. historically held, rightfully or wrongfully, the title of the moral enforcer. So the world looks to them to see what is expected from their own country in some respects. A little about the U.S. governmental structure. The federal government is composed of three distinct branches. The legislative branch, which has its power through the U.S. Constitution and the Congress. The executive branch, whose powers are given to the president. And the judicial branch, which has power through the federal courts. The powers and duties of these branches are further defined by the acts of Congress, which include the creation of executive departments and courts inferior to the Supreme Court, which has the highest jurisdiction of all the cases. We have the power to vote for the legislative, so the Congress, and the executive, which is the president, branches. The legislative branch is called the U.S. Congress and is made of the House of Representatives and the Senate. Now, this is important because the House of Representatives and the Senate will pass many of the bills that are going to change both the state and federal level. The House of Representatives consists of a person that represents a municipality, or in any case, a region. The number of representatives a region has is based on the number of citizens in that region. The citizens are able to vote for election of a representation that best suits their priorities. Therefore, here's a place in which citizens can sway the government. The House of Representatives is large and is in the lower chamber. There are 435 of them. The House of Representatives works kind of on the opposite side of the Senate to get bills passed. So conversely, the Senate has representation as though each state has an equal population. Therefore, every state may elect two members of the Senate. It is considered higher standing as it has a longer term of at least 6 years, and there are fewer of them. Together, the role of the Congress includes the approval of treaties and the confirmation of cabinet secretaries, Supreme Court justices, federal judges, ambassadors, and other federal executive officials and uniformed officers. As well, the Senate is responsible for impeachment trials, including those of the president, as we saw these last few years. In some cases, it may also be responsible for appointing the vice president, but those are really niche cases, like when there's a tie or something. Of course, we've all heard of the president. He represents, or she, hopefully in the future, represents the executive branch of the federal powers. Currently, the president is Donald Trump, a businessman from privileged background. He's interested in the economy of the U.S. and bases a lot of his decisions on how the U.S. can make more money. He holds little value for immigration or socialist programs such as child care or universal health care. And this directly affects those with disabilities. Prior to that, we had Barack Obama, who greatly subsidized health care and flouted racial and gender equality. All right, I'm biased. I think he's overall just a great guy. But everyone is welcome to their own opinion. The executive power in the federal government is essentially to be president. The president and the vice president are elected together as running mates by the Electoral College, for which each state is allocated a number of seats based on the representation in both houses of Congress. So this is how Trump was elected last time, even though Hillary Clinton had more votes for the general population of the U.S., because some states have more seats in this Electoral College. If those states had more votes for Trump, then they would win a larger amount of seats, and that's how Trump won. A president is elected for up to two terms of 4 years. The two major parties are the Democrats, equated to the Liberals in Canada, and the Republicans, who are similar to the Conservatives. So in terms of healthcare, what do they kind of stand for? While the Republicans have always supported a level of ownership over your own health care, I mean, it goes to show Republicans really do find value in each person being responsible for themselves. And that means their success is their own, but their failure is their own. And they take this to healthcare as well. To this end, they support either having a tax-deductible healthcare savings account or paying into a private insurance. Either way, you better come with your own money. The issue with insurance is that oftentimes they are looking for some sort of predisposition to disease, such as a disability, and they won't cover your costs as well or will force you to pay a lot more monthly. However, the Republicans believe in essentially using the legislature to take control of the private healthcare and to force them to reduce costs of premiums and deductibles while still allowing the flexibility that they claim people desire to choose their own path. Oftentimes, though, it's just what healthcare plan they can afford. Alongside the savings account, they will be given a refundable tax credit to buy health insurance on the private market. They also want to keep those with pre-existing conditions on their parents' health plan and to promote the ability of businesses to provide insurance. An interesting point of note is that they will remove the opportunity for assisted suicide. Trump wants to repeal Obamacare medical programs that allow subsidized healthcare access to everyone. The Democrats have a different stance on healthcare. On the party page, it opens with, "Democrats have been fighting to secure universal healthcare for the American people for generations. And we are proud to be the party that passed Medicare, Medicaid, and the Affordable Care Act." Universal healthcare, as many know, is the ability for all citizens of a region to be provided with healthcare, regardless of their income. Canada has been praised repeatedly for its success in the universal healthcare. In 2010, President Obama passed Obamacare, which was a historic landmark making affordable healthcare available to any American. This was building on President Johnson's Medicare Act in the 60s, which provided Medicare to seniors, and the Children's Healthcare Insurance Plan in the 90s. Thanks to the Affordable Healthcare Act, a lot more than even 20 million Americans have gained health care coverage, and uninsured rates has been covered in to about half. Similar to President Trump, among the newly insured are more than 2.3 million young adults who are covered because the Affordable Care Act allows them to stay on their parents' insurance until age 26. This is especially important as more and more people are going into higher education, and it's taking a longer time for them to get jobs in which they can pay for their own insurance. An amazing thing is that discrimination based on pre-existing conditions is now illegal. And nearly 8 in 10 Americans who recently shopped for the healthcare in the marketplace could get it for less than $100 a month. This makes a big difference to people that have disability that may perhaps not get insurance because this previous condition will limit how much money they can get back, and that may be forced in a place that they have less money to give towards health insurance. The Affordable Care Act also provides tax credits to small businesses that help offset the cost of employee coverage and tax credits to help families pay for insurance. This employee coverage tax credit was something that the Republicans also wanted to do as well. Essentially, the Democrats want a public plan so that the private system cannot abuse Americans and force them to pay an arm and a leg, and maybe the other leg, for the unfortunate circumstance of being sick. So I went through a little bit of the usgov.org website to see what information was easily provided on what to do if you need help because you have a disability. I was curious to see how accessible that knowledge was. There are three sections to the federal, to the disability area. There is workplace disability insurance, compensation benefits for disabled veterans, and social security benefits for people with disabilities. When you enter the page, it says there are two types of programs, short-term and long-term disability. It says to ask your employer what they provide and then to shop around for the best plan for you. Again, this puts the onus on the individual to buy or negotiate a disability plan. There is also a federal option. If you have a disability, you have three options for health coverage through the government. There is Medicaid, which provides free or low-cost medical benefits to people with disabilities. Medicare, which provides medical insurance for those people under 65 with certain disabilities and any age with end-stage renal disease, including permanent kidney failure requiring dialysis or a kidney transplant. The Affordable Care Act marketplace also offers options to people who have a disability, don't qualify for disability, and need health coverage. Note that all of the federal options are tied to the Democratic administration. To qualify for either program, you must meet the SSA's definition of disability. And that is the Social Security Administration program's definition of a disability. You, one, can't work. Two, your disability is expected to last at least 1 year or result in death. And three, your impairment is on Social Security's list of disabling medical conditions. There are two Social Security Administration programs that pay benefits to people with disabilities. There is Social Security Disability Insurance and the Social Security Insurance. So the Social Security Disability Insurance is for people who have become disabled after earning enough security work credits within a certain amount of time. While the Supplemental Security Income is for people with disabilities or who are 65 or older with little or no income and resources. SSI is not Social Security. Although the names sound similar and the Social Security Administration runs the program, it does not fund this supplemental security income. There are also many links to municipal and state level resources on this website, which gives me the sense that navigating the many ways that you may need to get benefits will be bouncing from one resource to another. I can understand why having state segregation would be frustrating, because depending on where you live, they may not want to give much compensation for people with disabilities. For example, a liberal state such as California may feel an obligation to give more social services relative to a conservative state such as Mississippi, though I haven't really looked at California and Mississippi themselves. An important point of note on this website is that the Medicaid program will pay for a long-term caregiver, whereas private insurances might try and reach around and not provide financial aid for a long-term caregiver of a person with disabilities. This can make a really, really big impact on what people with disabilities can do and how they might live their lives. Separately, there is also Veteran Compensation Program, which appear to be somewhat separate from other disability programs and also a little different to navigate. What I'm trying to say is that this next election dictates the healthcare system a lot, and in turn, those with disabilities will have to deal with. So if you can, get out and vote, and if you can, pray that it goes the way you want it to go.
Thanks, Sarah. That was super informative. Now, I'm going to talk about housing, specifically affordable housing, and what each party is trying to do about it. Affordable housing is incredibly important, as a house is not just a building. It is a home, a place that shelters, protects, and nurtures its occupants. It supports their personal and professional development, and offers a safe harbor. This is especially true for those who might not be able to work due to various disabilities. Already a key issue before the pandemic, the need for affordable housing has become even more paramount. The United States is facing an unprecedented housing crisis as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, with millions of families at risk of being evicted. Recently, more than 6 million households have been forced to move from home ownership to renting. Rental costs have escalated so that nearly 12 million families spend more than 50% of their incomes just on rent. The Republican stance on housing is similar to that of their 2016 platform. They state that they will advance responsible homeownership, while guarding against the abuses that led to the housing collapse of 2008. They state that they must scale back the federal role in the housing market, promote responsibility on the part of borrowers and lenders, and avoid future taxpayer bailouts. Essentially, they're trying to prevent another housing bubble and major recession like that of 2008, which was catastrophic for disabled persons. Evidence suggests that older workers with disabilities have been hit particularly hard by the 2008 recession, as the increased difficulty in finding a job faced by individuals with disabilities, combined with the longer spells of unemployment experienced by all workers in the recession, could mean that laid-off disabled workers in their pre-retirement years might never return to work. Meanwhile, the Democratic stance on affordable housing is much more geared towards the current COVID-19 situation. They state that no one should have to spend more than 30% of their income on housing, so that families have ample resources left to meet their other needs and save for retirement. This is crucial for families with disabled persons, as they often need to purchase incredibly expensive equipment or medicine on top of all the family's other basic needs. Democrats also believe the government should take aggressive steps to increase the supply of housing, especially affordable housing, and address long-standing economic and racial inequities in our housing markets. Finally, Democrats state that they are committed to providing housing support for every eligible family and will enact protections to keep landlords from discriminating against voucher recipients. This is especially important, as 49% of housing support in recent years have gone to the elderly or disabled. In summary, it seems that both parties support the idea of affordable housing, while striving to achieve it in very different ways. On one hand, Republicans are more in favor of the free market concept, and making sure that abuses are minimized so that prices won't be artificially jacked up. On the other hand, Democrats are more in favor of a direct approach of constructing more housing and directly giving aid to those that need it. That concludes our segment on the U.S. elections. If you're an American, I highly encourage you to go out and vote, as your voice really does matter.
Thanks, Sarah and Richard. It will be really interesting to see if Donald Trump is reelected or not, as it definitely affects everyone, including us here in Canada. Now let's go on to another song break. Katie, who are we listening to next?
Here is a song, Paradise, by Matthew Manias, off the album of Blurred Visions. I like making vibes.
Let's get it.
When I'm with you, I'm in paradise, paradise. I swear my eyes are paralyzed, paralyzed. Cause with you, I'm in paradise, paradise. And trust me, that is rare to find, rare to find. Used to live without a care in life, care in life. And now I am in paradise, paradise. I'll hold you down, I swear I'll try, swear I'll try. I just wanna share the night, share the night with you. Remember you, my soul. That I need, you challenge me in ways that help me to believe that you're my only hope, a place where I feel safe, a heart made of gold that I will never change. You're beautiful, I know that I will never waste this. Want you to know that I'm so happy that we waited. We had
have a love that everybody out here chasing. You are my world, so here's my whole heart for your taking. So every day when I wake up, I can't believe my eyes. I feel alive, the deepest of my dreams are alive. I will take your lead, I just wanna take some time. Just take my time. When I'm with you, I'm in paradise. Deepest of my dreams are alive. I will take your lead, I just wanna take some time. Just take my time. When I'm with you, I'm in paradise. Paradise, I swear my eyes are paralyzed. Paralyzed, cause with you I'm in paradise. Paradise, and trust me that it's rare to find. Rare to find, used to live without a care in life. Care in life, and now I am in paradise. Paradise, I hold you down, I swear I'll try.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.5 FM. The song you just heard was Paradise by Matthew Manias off the album of Blurred Visions. Matthew Manias is Indigenous, hailing from Garden Hill First Nation, and was born blind. He struggled with depression at a young age and credits music for helping him cope. He is a fully self-taught artist that has been independently releasing music since 2009. His debut album, Blurred Visions, features the song you have just heard, Paradise.
Thanks, Katie. So as everyone knows, elections are underway in BC today, and I hope eligible voters in the province are in full swing voting for candidates in your appropriate district. The elections this year look quite different from previous years thanks to the COVID-19 pandemic. According to Business in Vancouver, officials are predicting that the results of today's election will not be known until well into November. The pandemic has prompted an enormous increase in mail-in voting. To give you a comparison, in 2017, only 6,517 people voted by mail. This year, approximately 717,000 have requested vote by mail packages. Those are pretty crazy numbers. Unlike votes casted on election day, which for those of you who don't know are counted on the same day, Elections BC need to first verify votes by mail, and they need to make sure that it was in fact made by eligible voters before they can be counted, hence the long delay. So those voting today or awaiting the results might need to be really patient this year. Polls before today have consistently shown the NDP party is taking a significant lead over Liberals and Greens, so there's a strong chance they may keep that lead. But the real question among all of this is, what are the parties proposing to ensure better legislation for people with accessibility issues? The party in the lead, the NDP, are promising to extend the $300 COVID-19 supplement that was introduced in April 2020 until December for income assistance and disability assistance recipients. But unlike the Greens party, the NDP is not promising to make it a permanent monthly top-up. The NDP party is also proposing to invest $17.3 million over the next 3 years in conjunction with WorkBC to provide assistive technology, medical equipment, and safety devices to support employment opportunities for people with disabilities. Christy, is there anything else the NDP party is proposing for people with disabilities? What about the other parties? What are they all saying?
Yeah, thank you, Lakshmi, for that. That was really informative. And Yes, BC's snap elections are underway. There have been many concerns on what the government will do to support individuals living with a disability, especially with COVID-19 making a severe impact on the lives of so many. Last election, the NDP promised to introduce a piece of legislation ensuring accessibility for people with disabilities. And this legislation was meant to be implemented this fall. However, as we've seen, COVID-19 and this snap election has caused the delay, and this has been changed. And we've heard that NDP did say that they would recommit to this legislation if they do get reelected. So yeah, so many people have been waiting for this comprehensive legislation, and I believe it's about time that we do implement this. And especially as we've seen during this pandemic, it's clear that there have been many shortcomings in supporting vulnerable people. So many disability advocates, as well as people with disabilities, do agree that the most immediate way to help would be to increase assistance rates. The low rates often make it difficult for people with disabilities to afford proper housing, food, as well as assistive devices and equipment that help them work and socialize safely. And the low rates can also be a barrier for people who have complex health needs to get the right preventative care, especially with the cost of living in Vancouver being incredibly high. As you can imagine, this can be especially stressful for those living in poverty, which is a topic that is a big issue in BC right now and needs serious actions. The NDP said raising these rates permanently would be a decision for February 2021, so I guess we would have to wait and see. Additionally, the New Democrats said that they would focus on elements of universal design spaces that are usable for people of all abilities that are to be included in new public housing builds. Now, what has the Liberal government said about addressing support for people with disabilities? Well, under the BC Liberal government, assistance rates have been stagnated, and they did say that it would not be cut. However, they didn't specify if it would be raised after the pandemic. As well, similar to the NDP announced about accessible design spaces, the Liberals plan to update building codes to prioritize accessibility and increase the supply of accessible homes, which currently there is a short supply of. Another issue that Liberal Member of Parliament Stephanie Carew of Surrey South would like to address was ensuring that people with developmental disabilities can have an advocate with them when getting hospital care, which, as you can imagine, has been a prominent issue, especially since the COVID-19 pandemic. Yeah, so in summary, some of the main concerns that I've noticed within the disability community of advocates as well as people who have disability has to do with what permanent income assistance will be available. This is really important for them to feel secure, and as well as how will the government build a more inclusive community for all, whether or not you are living with a disability. So this would look like more inclusive housing, health support, education, etc. Well, that's what I have heard for now. And does anyone have any thoughts or concerns about this BC election? Like, what is one thing that you would really like to see?
I think that, you know, hi guys, it's Gigi here. So I think, yeah, like what the future looks like. I mean, more resources for the future, whether that's housing or healthcare definitely is a major thing. So especially with the pandemic, healthcare and housing and just a lot of resources in the mental health department. So that's my thoughts on that. Anybody else has any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, DP. I mean, the $300 top off is pretty abysmal, and I definitely think it should be made permanent, personally.
Yeah, yeah, we've seen through the pandemic, this really like exacerbated a lot of inequalities, and people have been like falling through the cracks and being worried about how they would like provide get food and like the basic healthcare needs. So yeah, a lot of people, like whether or not you have a disability or just needing that support, it's like a very big concern.
Has anyone already voted today, or are they planning on voting? And tell us about your experience.
I actually voted by mail way before today's election. So that was a really new experience for me. They're basically like, it's actually kind of complicated, but not too bad. There were a bunch of different, like, I'd like to say folders inside. You'd had to like fill out each one and kind of like put them together, like put one inside the other, and then you would mail them. So it wasn't actually too bad, and it was actually, yeah, pretty easy and nice to be able to vote from home. It's a lot easier than going out and voting.
Yeah, definitely a much safer alternative. What about anybody else? Anyone else vote, or are they planning on voting today?
Yeah, I voted with the advanced voting. I did it with my family, actually, and it was pretty nice, late at night as well, so it wasn't that busy. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to see the promises and what the promises and like legislation get in place.
Yeah, so I guess I can talk about my experience. I did go vote, and to be honest, I have only voted in the last three elections, provincial and federal combined, and for me, it was totally accessible. If you haven't voted before, I will just give you a glimpse of what my experience looked like for someone with a physical disability. I use an electric wheelchair to access my community and go out in the public. And I also have a support staff to assist me with my needs. When I recently went to vote in advance for the DC election, it was so close to where I was, or where I live. It barely took 2 minutes to get there. There was ample parking for my oversized van, and the building was fully accessible. I made sure to put my mask on, and when I went inside, I was greeted by a very kind person who opened the door and guided me where I wanted, or where to go. I made sure I had my voting card, and this is very important to take with you when you go to vote, for the election officials to see. So yeah, you definitely need your voting card. When I got to the voting station, the nice gentleman asked me for identification. And again, that is another very important thing for you to take with you when you go vote. I was then asked to read a declaration that I'm eligible to vote and haven't voted in this election. After that, my support staff had to declare that she would not interfere with my choice when marking the ballot on my behalf. When we were then asked to go behind the privacy screen to vote, and I just did, and I did just that by telling my support staff which candidate I wanted to support. She marked the ballot accordingly and put it in the ballot box, and that was it. It was so quick, straightforward, and very, very easy. So I really hope people with disabilities take this opportunity to let their voices be heard, because everyone has the right to choose and shape what our future should look like.
Thanks, DP, for telling us about your experience. That's very interesting. And it sounds like everyone was very helpful and super kind, and it was very straightforward.
And Katie, take it away with our next song.
Here's a song, Alone in This, by Krista Couture, off the album of Long Time Leaving.
It was not just happenstance when I caught you hold my glance, when we said goodbye and lingered with our hands. Or did I imagine that? What I felt, did you feel back? Don't lie to me, you're a better man than that. Ooh, tell me yes or tell me no.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.5 FM. The song you just heard was Alone in This by Krista Couture off the album of Long Time Leaving. Krista Couture is a nonfiction writer, singer and songwriter, and broadcaster. She is also proudly Indigenous, queer, disabled, and a mom.
Well, I guess that wraps up our episode for today. Hope you all know why it is important to vote and let your voice be heard. If you are interested in joining our team or think there is an issue we should bring up on our show, please send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca. That's accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Please like our All Access Pass Facebook page.
If you're on Twitter and Instagram or both, please follow us at @access_CITR.
If you missed part of our live show today and want to listen again, or maybe you want to listen to our past shows, you can do so on citr.ca by going on the search box and type in All Access Pass.
Thank you for listening. Stick around for more CITR programming coming up next. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hi, this is Katie J. I play drums in Lié. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people.
Since they keep me up like coffee, it's so good if you like it.